Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 15 of the Ball 5 podcast, the baseball podcast that had an extra day to think about doing a cold open, but still hasn't come up with anything. My name is DJ Lopes. I'm one of your hosts today, and joining me is Chris Lopes. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, you know, hurting from the lack of a cold open. I feel like once I ruined your cold open last week, then you just, you know, got shaken your confidence there.
Yeah, I lost the fastball. I don't have it. I do have a discussion point for the first. I didn't know how to rope it in to a cold open, but I guess I'll just go into it right now. So, Chris, are you familiar with the new trend going around? I saw a video about this, but it's one of the things that in my irrational confidence, I am like 100% confident I can do. Are you familiar with the 9 beers, 9 hot dogs, 9 innings challenge?
Oh, 100%. I've always wanted to try it.
It has. I've seen a couple videos of it. I'm sure that this is not a new phenomenon. I'm sure it's been going on for years, but I have just saw it recently with baseball kicking back up. And I am not very much of an alcoholic drinker, but I am someone that can eat a lot of food in a given time. So I have a ton of irrational confidence in this, in my ability to do this. My one thing is that, like I have just said, I am not much of an alcoholic drinker. I am very much not a beer drinker. So I was trying to think of substitutions for beer that would be physically manageable, but obviously still bring the, I guess, downsides that drinking beer. Because, like, hard seltzer, could not do that. Too much carbonation to drink 9 of those over, like, a 2.5, 2-hour, 45-minute span.
I think that's a point, though. Like, well, beer has similar carbonation.
But, I mean, it feels more like... Seltzer feels more like soda in that regard, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you could do kombucha. That would be nasty.
Yeah, but then that just doesn't get you...
9 Red Bulls.
That would kill me. Yeah. I think that would actually kill me.
You know what? You don't want to drink beer? Sorry.
Fair. Fair. But I'll have to come up with something. Maybe that'll be our first viral moment. Is doing this challenge.
I have heard that it does seem very doable, but I have heard that it is extremely hard. I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, with the pitch clock now, it's a little harder because that cuts off about a half hour's worth of time to do this. Once again, Rob Manfred just screwing everything up. But yeah, I'm fairly certain I could do this if given the opportunity, despite not drinking too much. And now I've been wanting to go to a game recently, and maybe I wouldn't do this on the first baseball game I went to this year, just to kind of give myself the opportunity to go to a baseball game and enjoy it. But I think I could do it. The only other issue is that, especially if we go to like Fenway or something like that, the closest ballpark to us, that is an incredibly expensive endeavor.
Oh, I was just thinking about doing it at home. I wasn't going to do it in the game.
That's significantly sadder, though.
No, well, just like sitting in your basement. What I've normally seen, the 9 beers, 9 dogs, 9 outs, or 9 innings thing. That would be fun, just do it in 3 innings. I've seen it like a group of people at home watching a game doing it. Because logistics, I don't see the logistics of doing it you have to basically do standing room only and stand right next to a concession stand the whole time.
That's part of the challenge. You have to allow yourself the constraints.
I think literally the only people doing it would be Miami Marlins fans or like Cincinnati Reds fans or Oakland A's fans.
I don't know. The video of the person I saw doing it did it at Fenway. So I think it's doable, but
Jesus Christ,
regardless, enough about that. We'll get into our actual content of the episode. It may be a little lighter. I was watching a lot of baseball this past week, more than I did, I would say, the first week. But, you know, some stories to hit on, but nothing too much. So we are going to do, just like we did last week, just kind of like a good, bad, surprise thing we liked, thing we didn't, thing that surprised us. And first, I'll start off this time with the good. And it's not too much to do with actual baseball, but it is tangential, and that is the celebrations. Most notably, the celebrations that the Orioles have been doing. I guess this is in line with our recent talk about a lot of drinking, because they have recently introduced what has been called on the internet, they are, for PR purposes, not referring to it as the Dong Bong, but it is lovingly called the Dong Bong. They have been, after hitting home runs, they have a funnel in the dugout now, and they are pouring water down the funnel, and the player has to drink it, so...
What do they call it? The hit hose or something like that?
They probably just call it the homer hose. I would assume
like that.
Some people have their issues with the homer hose, which is...
Homer hose, yep.
Yeah, maybe a little too prudy for me, but Adley Rushman did say that they're just big proponents of staying hydrated.
Yeah.
Which I love. It's one of those things where you're a young team. You might as well kind of lean into it. You're not going to be there to just be all like, you know, button up the shirts and go out there and play the game the right way. You're out there to have fun and recognize it. And they're showing that. Another one that I really liked is they hit a double and Austin Hayes did like the sprinkler motion. And yeah. There was like five or six people on the dugout spraying water out of their mouth. So a lot of water-based celebrations there for the Orioles. But I just wanted to call those out. I thought that was really fun. The beginning of the season is really when you can kind of see those celebrations start to make their way, what team is doing what. I know another one that I really liked is they have this little sword that the Pirates have, that they give you the sword. And there's a really cool video. I think now it's in the commercial breaks now for MLB when they do like their baseball Zen thing of G-Man Choi cutting it up with the sword. And I thought that was really fun. So I think that is in general my good. I just really like a good celebration.
Have you seen the Angels Samurai hat one too?
Yes, that was another one. They had a cowboy hat as recent as early this year.
Yeah,
but Shohei Ohtani introduced the samurai hat, and they have been starting to wear it. So maybe that was maybe they had the bet going on during the World Baseball Classic where if Team USA won, they got to keep the cowboy hat. And if Team Japan won, then Shohei got to take his pick, and he picked the samurai hat. But that was pretty cool. It looks pretty heavy.
Yeah, it's a pretty Duke thing. It's got to cost some money. I'd love to know the logistics of that. Like,
yeah.
Who buys those? I know we're all talking about millionaires, so I know it doesn't matter. You know,
I mean,
but I'm like, does that come out of like the team budget?
Shohei probably foot the bill for it. I would assume he's got money. He hasn't signed that big contract yet, but he's also probably the most sponsored man in the world inside and outside the U.S. So I'm sure he's got the money to cover it. And Trout just signed a $400 million contract. I'm sure they're good for it. But yeah, I think that's what I wanted to talk about. I mean, Mets picked it up. We'll talk about them later. So that's always a good... as far as players kind of lighting it up right now, you've got Brian Reynolds has been lighting it up for a while, but Rafael Devers and Pete Alonso have been skying to the top of the home run leaderboard. So that's been very fun to watch them chase it. But yeah, I think that's just my good.
Nice. It's going to be a new Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Pete Alonso, and Rafael Devers. So my good, I believe it is my turn. My good is also tangential to actual baseball, but I think it's privy just knowing that, you know, Jackie Robinson Day just passed yesterday. So I do want to kind of just mention MLB's educational things that they're doing. I know I sound like such a nerd when I say this, but and I don't ever want to gas up MLB. I really don't ever want to. But I guess I can gas up the National Baseball Hall of Fame and the Negro League Hall of Fame, because the stuff that MLB The Show has been doing with Bob Kendrick and the Negro League storylines is really cool. And then hearing these stories kind of dispersed in between. And I was actually watching a game yesterday, and they took the cuts from Bob Kendrick doing the Jackie Robinson information in MLB The Show. They were actually showing commercials of that. So I think that's really cool. I think it's really nice to get the stories from the Negro League. You always hear the stories. They always say that the statistics, you know, are impossible to get from the Negro Leagues, but these stories are what kind of lives on there. And like I said, all the stories in the Negro Leagues storylines have been really cool. MLB The Show 23 has done a really good job with it. And then kind of just going on that that tangent there, the National Baseball Hall of Fame has been doing Hall of Fame connections. And they are, you might have noticed them if you are watching MLB TV. And it's kind of in between the innings, between the baseball zens and stuff, they'll do Hall of Fame connections. And, you know, Carlos Pena is sitting down and he's holding Babe Ruth's bat or looking at the Abner Doubleday baseball and stuff like that. So these are just kind of pretty cool things that they're doing that kind of show you just some of the history of the game and really promote the Hall of Fames. You know, both the Negro League and the baseball, the National Baseball Hall of Fame. So I hate to say it, but I like what MLB is doing there. So,
yeah, it is pretty cool. It's better than seeing the highlight of Aaron Judge's 60th home run five times over the course of a game, getting to see that. And on the front of the Negro Leagues, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. The job that they did there is tremendous. I really love Bob Kendrick. I think that he's one of our best storytellers, at the very least in baseball. He is one of the best storytellers this game has to offer, and I think the baseball is very lucky. And, you know, a lot of the representatives of the Negro Leagues, past and present, are very lucky to have Bob as, you know, kind of the guy that gets to share those stories, just because of the adoration and excitement that you can clearly tell he has for the game, and the love that he has for those players and their stories. And I think that that's one of my favorite things about old baseball. Old baseball obviously is a lot of, you know, myth and people that may not have been great people, but the stories that are generated, just because it's just kind of how legend passes when you don't really have TV and stuff like that to kind of show things, how legend passes on it, and the stories that you hear from old baseball, I think it's just tremendous. And them being able to show that off, especially for Jackie Robinson Day, a player whose history is obviously well known, but from when he got to the majors on is well known. There's not, like, it's not super duper well known his time at UCLA, where he was a four sport star. And Bob Kendrick likes to mention this a lot. Baseball was maybe his worst sport. He was really, really talented at basketball, track, and football, I believe. But his time there, his time in the U.S. military, which it was kind of, I believe, one of the things that really kind of proved his will and his mettle and his ability to stand up when it needed to be done. But also his ability to, you know, just his strength and his character, I think, is really good. It's just a really good way to tell stories that maybe haven't already been told or in a super public forum. And I say that for all the other players that were represented in the MLB The Show storylines there. I'm not going to name them all because I didn't put up the list, so I don't want to leave any of them out. But just a lot of great stories. If you have the game, I very much urge you to play it. I think that it's a great use of your time. But yeah, I think that that's a good pick, both with the Baseball Hall of Fame one and the Negro Leagues Hall of Fame picks. Now, after talking about some good stuff, let's go on to some bad stuff. Chris, would you like to lead off? Because I have a couple of things that I want to hit on, so I'll just hit on whatever you don't.
Yeah, I don't know how much to really go in on this. And it's not necessarily a terrible thing, but it is more of just kind of like an intriguing thing. But it's all the discourse on the economics of baseball coming out of the shortened games now. You know, and a lot of this has to do with the liquor sales and stuff like that. So, you know, a few teams have extended their liquor sales to the eighth inning instead of the seventh inning. And I forget what player it was.
It was Matt Strom.
Matt Strom. Matt Strom said the whole thing about wanting people to sober up. I will say that if you do get absolutely blitzed at a baseball game and you have to have three innings to sober up, three innings is not enough time for you to sober up.
Yeah. It was one of those, he's absolutely making the right point there.
Yes.
But the fact that he's making the right point kind of highlights some, like, dumb things as to why the rule is in there in the first place, because I mean it is clearly there so that people can sober up, but obviously, like you mentioned, there's like a certain amount of alcohol that just sitting around for 30 minutes without having access to it cannot allow you to have the function to get back behind a wheel. It's one of those where he's absolutely making the right point, but it's highlighting how dumb of a point it even is in the first place.
Yeah, so it's just been a lot of that. It's just like the economics of everything. One, again, intriguing thing, not necessarily a bad thing, but I'm wondering if you're noticing it too, or if I'm just going crazy. I will say it's mostly from the radio. So I think I've mentioned it before on the podcast. I am a big, like, listen to the games on the radio guy, not just out of necessity, just because, of course, I'm doing things around the house a lot of the time when I'm listening to the games. But I generally like it. I feel like baseball's a sport to be really enjoyed, you know, while you're doing other things. What I've noticed is that almost every inning they're coming in a pitch or two late. And I think it's just because of advertisements, you know? So it made me wonder, you know, like I said, like the not necessarily bad thing of this is that now I'm really intrigued as to like, how they have like every stolen base. You have like a Dunkin' Donuts sponsors that stolen base, you know. I'm now wondering, like, did they upcharge the cost of the ad space for stolen bases? But also, like, how do the ads work when you do cut down the time as much? You know, I even have noticed some of the broadcasts cutting in late too. So, you know, I just think it's just an interesting perspective, and I ask you now to next time you listen to a radio game on the radio, just kind of look out for that, because it's one of those things where you're not really noticing it. Not really much happens on the first pitch off of a break, but it's just a weird little thing that they've been doing.
Wait until we have the Papa John pitch timer violation of the game.
Papa John. What? He'll say the N-word if you...
He's no longer there. He's no longer there. They've reshaped right, their sorry. Image with
Shaq will scream,
who's currently
evading.
evading taxes. I don't know. Whoever runs
subpoena,
the FTX.
Subpoena for FTX.
I was mentioning that.
What an insane situation.
How do you not find him? Are you not allowed to serve people court orders at their job?
I don't think there's got to be something like that. I thought you had to, because the only thing I know of it is in the movies where, like, if you don't give them your full name or something like that, like, they can't serve. You know, it's like when they come up to you and you're like, are you Christopher Lopes? And if you say yes, then they'll go, you're served or something. But if you don't say anything, then they won't. It's a ridiculous thing. And again, this is only in the movies or whatnot, but I don't know how it works in real life.
I'm trying to remember. And if, We actually know a couple lawyers, so I'll have to reach out to them. I'll have to reach out to them after the podcast. But I don't know if it's different than when you're served your, like, divorce court papers. But I remember very specifically when Olivia Munn and Jason Sudeikis got divorced. Wait, was it Jason Sudeikis? Who's the guy that's Ted Lasso? Is that Jason Sudeikis?
Yeah.
Okay. So when they got divorced... I'll roll with it. When they got divorced, I know that Olivia Munn was at, like, a press event, and she got delivered her papers. So, Shaquille O'Neal does NBA on TNT, like, twice a week. And TNT has a very, like, openly Googleable area or studio that you can just look up. I don't understand it. He's also 7'3". And massive, so he's not a very hard person to spot in a crowd. He's not going to be able to camouflage himself, but nope. Whatever. That got away from the point. You do make a good point there about kind of the adjustments that broadcasts have to make coming back from this, and kind of how money, and this is with everything. I don't want to get too much into the no ethical consumption under capitalism rant, because we don't have the time for it, but it is just one of those things where if you look hard enough, and sometimes you don't even have to look hard enough, you'll see how money controls everything in the things we love. So And that's just kind of with shorter games, them trying to recoup the costs that they lost in longer games. You're starting to see that there, which does suck. And it's just a kind of a shitty reminder of some of the things that we live under. But I can't even say on to brighter things because we're going to my bad, which, like I said, I just have a couple of things around the field. Some really bummer injury stuff with O'Neal Cruz fracturing his ankle on one of the worst slides I've ever seen.
Terrible.
That's one thing I've noticed early in the season. Some really bad slides leading to some potential injuries. On opening day, if you remember, Adley Rutschman slid into second base, and he slid, like, way too early, I think, and his foot came up, and he, like, kicked Christian Arroyo in the head, and Arroyo was down for a little bit. And then even going back to spring training, you had Brandon Nimmo spraining his ankle on a foot first slide. And then now you have O'Neal Cruz fracturing his ankle on a slide. And that one just sucks because he's such an exciting young talent. And he's obviously a 6'7" kind of lanky guy. So lower body injuries are never fun with guys of that build. And it sucked that it led to a bench clearing brawl. I kind of understand Sebi Zavala, the catcher's frustrations, but probably should have looked at the fact that he was hurt, lying on the ground in pain, and then not decided, oh, let's get in this guy's face so we can start a bench clearing brawl. And then other kind of bummer stuff, Adam Duvall went down with a wrist injury after having a really, really hot start. I'm not just saying that because it affects my fantasy team. But, you know, just a lot of people kind of going down early, as it is with, I'm sure, every season. But, just two that really stood out. And then a couple other ones, another small one that I wanted to get to is Javi Baez kind of just forgetting how baseball works. He had the whole thing where he pimped a double that he didn't see it go down until he absolutely had to run. And then later on in the inning, he thought there were two outs, so he ran on contact. It was a super easy catch for Kevin Kiermaier, who just threw it into second to double Javi up. He got benched after that. And just overall, after having a really bad season with a 671 OPS in his first season in Detroit, he's now down to a 504 OPS, hitting 184. And this is even after having a couple of good games since getting benched. But yeah, he's just seemingly forgot how to play baseball. And that is not a good sign 2 years into a six-year, $180 million deal. I know he has an opt-out, but he absolutely won't take that because there's not going to be more money to be had for Javi. But yeah, just a tough contract to sign when you remember that the Tigers were also in heavy talks with Carlos Correa at the time. And sure, Carlos Correa has his own injury baggage, but I would rather take a injury risk Carlos Correa over completely healthy Javier Baez.
Yeah, I mean, the injuries in general have been really a bummer. It makes you wonder, and this is not the case, but it makes you wonder if the bigger bases, like maybe players are not used to the extra 2 inches that are in the base paths or something. Again, that's dumb. That's not it. But it is interesting. You know, I do wonder, because this was actually going to be my bad before I thought of the money one, because there have been a ton of injuries. And as you just said, like, I am wondering, I would like to go into the vault and see just how many injuries have started off the beginning of the years for previous years, because it just does feel like a lot more, but I don't know if it's just because we're in it right now. And yeah, that whole Javi Baez thing is a bummer. He has been playing pretty well lately, as you said, but his first start, he was like 2-for-20 or something dumb like that. It was just absolutely insane.
Yeah, he had like a 380 OPS.
Yeah, but hey, whatever. Like you said, you know, the whole Tigers, it was the whole thing where, like, they went out, they bought money with Erod and Baez and stuff, and then they just, it's going to be one of those things where they're like, well, we tried, you know, so that's kind of a bummer, but.
Yeah, they spend a ton of money. The people that they spend a ton of money on did poorly, and then the prospects, aside from Riley Green, who's been solid, but other than that, have not been great. But that is all a lead up to my actual bad, which is the Oakland A's as a concept. It mainly what I want to focus on, obviously, we have the very low attendance. We have most recently the possum in the visiting broadcaster's booth that has not allowed visiting broadcasters to go in that booth because there's just a possum living in the walls. You know, John Fisher, he can very subtly hint that he's going to move away from Oakland, but he cannot call on pest control just to come in there for 30 minutes to get rid of the issue, I guess. But what I wanted to mainly note is, and this is probably just because the Mets played there for a three-day series, I'm glad we held off on recording because I didn't want to say this knowing that they probably won a game, but they got swept, so I can make this point. The first game on Friday was just some of the ugliest baseball I've ever witnessed. The Mets had 2 6-run innings, and in both of those, they only recorded one hit because they got walked 17 times. And the Mets are a very, you know, grinded out team. They are not the most talented hitting team, but they provide a solid offense because they have a lot of guys that can grind out ABs and really get pitch counts up and stuff like that. But that is not why they were walking so many people. They were just walking so many people because they just weren't throwing competitive pitches. They just, everything was off. James Caprellian could not locate a thing, went 3 2/3, walked 7 batters. Hogan Harris recorded 1 out and walked 5 batters. Unfortunately, I think that might have been his MLB debut. I'll have to look that up. Actually, let me actually just look this up, because I know that he just got called up. Yeah, that was his MLB debut. He walked 5 batters and recorded 1 out in relief. And then other people, Yuri's Familia, former Met, walked 4 in his inning in the third. So just, you know, it's just one of those things where you shouldn't be able to get away with this, putting up such non-competitive baseball and such blatantly non-competitive baseball, because they don't have a solid farm system. Like, they don't have a great farm system. So they're not exactly, like, letting the young guys come up and kind of figure it out. They're pitching some veterans there, and some people that have proven to be decent, but they're just not putting up anything competitive and not showing any want to put up anything competitive. It's just kind of gross. And I think the longer that baseball allows it to go on with the low attendance and stuff like that, just the worse it is, because it's not fun baseball for the people in Oakland who are standing against it. You know, it's basically, they are literally doing the plot of Major League, except the players are not in a movie, so they can't magically figure out everything that's wrong with them and go on a run to keep them in Cleveland, or in this case, Oakland. So it's just kind of the plot of Major League, except the owner that's the bad guy ends up getting the win, and you never want to see that.
Yeah, and I even think the Mets broadcast mentioned today that so the very fun, the A's were celebrating the 50th anniversary of the 1973 World Series against the Mets, which, small aside, I always think it's funny. I know why they do it, but I always think it's funny that teams always choose to do their anniversaries when they're playing against the team that they played. But I mean, it makes sense. But anyways, so they had that, and I guess Reggie Jackson said a few comments kind of pointed towards the A's or something like that. I think they were mostly innocent, but it was kind of like a, hey, you know, the fans deserve better, that type of stuff, you know. But it's crazy to just see like a kind of a storied franchise as they were, and to kind of just see them tumble because owners, and I don't know, it's just insane to see it be glorified through Moneyball. And not that Moneyball, the whole Moneyball era was really terrible, but you know, to kind of see it being glorified in that era and then just be like, oh, this is the A's, you know, and just having them do what they do on a daily basis, you know, and then also having the audacity to have like really nice uniforms doing it too. Love those lime green, like the, not the lime green, but the green and gold ones, or I guess all of them are green and gold, but the green primary jerseys that they have.
I would say you could give a pig makeup, but it would still just be a pig with makeup. But that's, at this point, too mean to pigs. Pigs are wonderful animals, and they don't deserve that rep of being associated with a team like that. And it's nothing against the players. They're obviously professionals just trying to work a job. they're just being put in a dog shit situation by a terrible person that is intentionally, and it not enough can be said about this, intentionally trying to drive everybody away so that he can have the excuse that nobody's going to games and nobody wants to support baseball in Oakland so that they can move to a place that it gets them a better deal that he just wants to be in. Not enough can be said on how terrible John Fisher is as an owner and as a person. And I think that we probably won't have much talk about the A's on this podcast because they are pretty irrelevant as a team. So I just wanted to get that discussion out while they face the Mets. Screw the A's organization and the front office and higher ups as a group. What wasn't surprising is how bad the A's were, but what is surprising is what Chris picked as his surprise for this week. That was a terrible segue, but go ahead and do it.
God, I don't even want to do it anymore. My surprising is actually the Angels calling up prospect Zach Nito.
Fuck you.
I gotcha.
That was mine. We'll just discuss it together.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, that's my surprising one. Just a lot of it because, you know, first round of last year's draft. So they actually went through and Nito's, an older prospect, if you really want to call it that. He is 22. But calling up their shortstop and sending down David Fletcher, whom seemed he was hitting terribly and he never really ever hit well. You know, he was really known for kind of the flashiness of his glove and then sometimes the scrappiness of his bat. But Fletcher being terrible, and I think it says here, you know, 125 with one RBI through eight games, and just having Fletcher get sent down to AAA. But Nito, you know, killing AA, even though that's the only highest that he went to, highest that he was there. But it's just cool to see the Angels actually do something kind of exciting, you know. Interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to note, because he did play for the Rocket City Trash Pandas, I just looked this up, he did play and led off in the 7-5 game that the Trash Pandas lost in the no-hitter. He went 2-for-4. He had two more hits than the entire Chattanooga Lookouts team, which, mind you, once again, I'm going to say, did not record a single hit, but won the game and scored 7 runs. I just want to say that one again. And then I just wanted to point out that Zach Nito was in that game, led off, went 2-for-4. And I was pretty sure that the Angels were going to have the first 2022 draftee to appear in the majors. I just didn't think that it was going to be Nito. As you mentioned, he is an older player, played 3 years at Campbell. I remember him getting some hype out of the draft when I did like my short time, like a day or two before the draft, when I decided I was going to get into it and watch some Cespedes Family Barbecue content about it, because they do great stuff on the draft. I wanted to watch, and he's a great bat, solid player. But the player that I thought was going to get called up first is Ben Joyce, their reliever who started that inning that the Chattanooga Lookouts scored. And I only really say that he was a third round pick and is permanently a one inning reliever guy. But I kind of thought that he was going to get called up just because he has the electric fastball that up to 104. So he kind of just has to develop a secondary pitch and get his control down, which is obviously two not very easy things to do. But as far as what his ceiling is as a one inning reliever, he's basically already there. So if you're going to draft him for that part, you're probably going to end up calling him up earlier than usual. So that's kind of what I thought was going to happen, was that Ben Joyce was going to show up probably sometime within the next year or so. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We talked about their shortstop a while back when they traded for Gio Urshela, kind of figuring out what they were going to do. And this seems like it. They mentioned that Gio Urshela is going to get some time at DH and first base. Nito has struggled a little bit. I don't think he's recorded his first hit yet in the two games that they've played. This will go up probably on Tuesday, so notwithstanding the game that the Angels will play the Red Sox on Monday. But yeah, I think it's pretty cool. It's one of those things where the one reason that the MLB draft does not get as much play as other drafts is because you don't see these guys for another 3-4 years after you draft them, unless you're like really a minor league nut. But it is kind of cool to see some guy get called up like right away. And I'm excited to see. It's kind of crappy that it led to David Fletcher, who's a fun meme in baseball Twitter, getting sent down. But yeah, I think that that's pretty exciting. I'm, I guess, surprised that you stole my surprise, but it kind of seemed like the obvious one too, just with how sudden that felt.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, it's just interesting. Like I said, the biggest surprise of it is actually see the Angels doing something fun. So
yeah. You want to get into a little bit of Mets talk? I don't have to go too long on it, but
yeah.
So yeah, I think a pretty big week for them that just passed, coming back after losing, you know, getting swept by the Brewers and kind of having some concerns. Obviously, this early in the season, you don't want to say anything is a concern, but some things that you didn't want to see early on, especially in that Brewers series. And then moving on, they took 2 of 3 from the Marlins at home, dropped the Carlos Carrasco start. And then the big series there was the series they had at home against the Padres. And I felt like they really showed up. The Padres have kind of been up and down, but the talent is very clearly there, as we saw this year, even last year during the playoffs. And I think that it was a big opportunity just to kind of, you know, get some demons off of them, because you could clearly tell, especially with how happy they were to get to Yu Darvish like they did in the first game, that the wild card series was still weighing on them. So I felt like that was pretty big for them to be able to get through.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was huge. I totally agree. I think that Padres series, you know, was a real good, you know, especially coming off of the last time the Mets and the Padres played games at Citi Field. So it was nice to kind of see the Mets come out. And we had mentioned it, the beginning kind of struggles in that Brewers series and everything was a lot to do with, you know, Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor just not really doing anything at the beginning of the season, but they've turned everything around. Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor look like two of the best players in the league right now. Pete looks like he's just able to hit any pitch out of any park at his will, you know, right now. And Pete Alonso just hit today against the Sari Athletics, just hit a home run in the 9th inning to tie it, and just an absolute bomb. So it's just really cool to see Pete and Francisco, and then all the other players kind of chipping in and picking each other up to keep pushing. So hoping, you know, for the Mets' sake that we can take on the rest of this. We have 7 more games against the Giants and the Dodgers. Giants most notably being the spot where all of the former Mets are right now. So the Mets will play like 5 players that there were in their system, so that'll be fun. The Darren Ruff season, too bad we don't have any lefties or that we'll throw out there. Maybe Peterson will get there.
Yeah, but Peterson's pitching tomorrow, Monday, I guess, in this case, so he will probably be pitching on Friday. Yeah. So I think that, you know, all that's right there. It's obviously good, especially this early in the season while you're kind of figuring all the kinks, just to get wins. I think these last 2 wins against the A's were a lot harder than they needed to be. I still think that there's a lot of concerns that they just cannot seem to hit lefties that they're slower than 94 miles an hour. And they seem to face a lot of lefties that they're slower than 94 miles an hour. They ran into it with Ryan Weathers, who pitched pretty nice. Who, fun fact, I sat on the bench while my 13U All-Star team lost in the state of North Dakota to Ryan Weathers' 13U All-Star team. He diced us up. I didn't get to face him. I would have hit a home run, I'm fairly certain. But also, Ryan Weathers, son of David Weathers, former Met. But yeah, I just wanted to flex that I was a bench warmer for a team that made it to the Babe Ruth World Series. Big things in the Lopes household. But yeah, so looking ahead, I guess you could just predict what the next week is going to be like. Obviously, as you mentioned, 3 with the Dodgers, 4 with the Giants, to end out that West Coast road trip, which is always tough. It was been a very tough thing in years past. I think it's good to get it out of the way this early in the season. You know, while everything's still kind of working it out for everybody, nobody's really like hit their stride yet. So I think that that's good to see. Their last series in San Francisco had a couple really chaotic ones. You had like a 13-12 game that was like Edwin Diaz's only blown save for a while. It was just a lot of chaos. They were like down 8-1. I went to bed because the game started at 10, and then I woke up to a 13-12 game that Jock Peterson had 3 homers in. It was ridiculous. But yeah, so at least the only series that we know matchups for is the Dodgers series, which the first one on Monday is David Peterson and Dustin May. Tuesday is Tyler McGill versus Clayton Kershaw, and Wednesday is Max Scherzer versus Noah Syndergaard. Good news for this upcoming week is that they will probably have Brett Beatty starting in all of them. We'll have to wait to see what the corresponding roster move is, but what is your prediction for the next week of Mets baseball?
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, I want to see them win both of these series, you know, so I want to see, you know, 2 of 3 versus the Dodgers, 3 of 4 versus the Giants. I guess the realistic thing would be I think that we can do 3 of 4 against the Giants. You know, 1 of 3 against the Dodgers wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but I'm going to go that we're going to go 5-2. Is that what I'm
good
trying
math
to say?
Good math.
Yeah, whatever.
7-0, baby.
You're thinking 7-0?
No, they'll probably go 4-3. I assume that they'll only take one against the Dodgers. They did split with them when they had a 4-game set in Dodger Stadium last year. But yeah, I think that they probably just take one. The offense quite hasn't gotten up to speed yet, and they're facing Dustin May and Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw, a lefty that throws under 94 miles an hour, and Dustin May, who's been on a heater so far this season, has looked really good. So I probably assume they drop those. They win against Syndergaard, and then that would leave 3 of 4 against the Giants. So yeah, looking forward to the week. Very excited, like I previously mentioned, to see Brett Beatty get up there. It's one of those things that they may struggle, and Francisco Alvarez has struggled, but you'd rather the promise of what Francisco Alvarez and Brett Beatty can bring than what you know already exists with Eduardo Escobar and Tomas Nido. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this next week of seeing the youngsters get in there. Chris, do you want to round this out by remembering a guy?
Yeah, of course. You want me to lead off?
Sure.
All right, I have one player from the Ohio State University, retired, or his last game at least was in 2015. So relatively recent. I'm going to go with a Nick Swisher, one-time All-Star. His All-Star was in 2010 with the Yankees. That year, he actually had like a string where he was like good for 25 home runs a year. You know, now granted, maybe it's dubious. I don't want to ever suggest that anyone was roiding up, but we are talking about the mid-2000s. So who knows? But you know,
hitting low 20s home runs is not a suggestion.
I think
you are roiding up.
Doing it 10 years in a row, though. I don't know.
I think you could just be a good power hitter.
Okay, whatever. You're right. I'll give Nick Swisher the benefit of the doubt. He was a good
power hitter. It's not like the Brady Anderson who hit 50 homers and then had like 46 career homers aside from that year.
Okay, I guess you're right. But no, I just think Nick Swisher was one of those players. Maybe it's because of his prolific power numbers here. But I was always one of those guys that I was just like always, you know, keyed into or nervous when he got up to bat, stuff like that. But kind of looking at his career, he was kind of just mid, you know, he was just like a fine baseball player, you know.
Goated MLB The Show card last year. Goated MLB, because he did the Home Run Derby X, which I don't know if you're familiar with that. It was their like way to go across the, I don't even, to be honest, I watched it for like 10 minutes when they had it, I think it was in like London. I still don't know. I think it was literally just a home run derby. I don't know what it is to this day, but MLB The Show released cards for all the participants in it, and he was one of them, and it was really good. So there's that. Good for Nick Swisher. I remember Nick Swisher having a chapter in Michael Lewis's Moneyball because they did a scouting trip for him. And obviously, his career started off in Oakland, where he kind of made a name for himself. And that was one of the, I guess, my first exposures to Nick Swisher was when I was a good reader and I read through Moneyball and their recruiting of him. It was like him, Kevin Youkilis. There was somebody else that they were looking at that I don't think panned out. But Nick Swisher was one of the guys that they were looking at because he had good on-base numbers. And he did have good on-base numbers for his whole entire career. Career on-base percentage of .351. Just overall, I would say that you're spot on. A very solid corner outfielder that wasn't going to blow you away, but is consistently good for around an 800 OPS plus, which you can never go wrong with. Keeping in that theme, I'm going to pick another guy that I mentioned when we were talking a little earlier this weekend. Pat Burrell is my pick. And I mention him because he is a reminder of my terrible era as a fantasy baseball owner. I'm still terrible as a fantasy baseball owner, but at least I'm admitting of it. This was back when I think this was when he was with the Giants. So this was like 2010, very early era of us doing fantasy baseball. I was like 11.
I remember this now.
Yeah, I was 11, already out of the playoff race by a lot. And I forget who I tried to trade, but I tried to trade Pat Burrell to someone. Literally, I was already out of the playoffs by a lot. I just was like, oh, when you play fantasy baseball, this is what you do. You trade your players. So I tried doing it, and since then, I don't think I have initiated a trade in my life in fantasy sports. I am just, I don't know how GMs do it. I can't let go. I just play the waiver wire. I just play the waiver wire, and maybe that's why I've only made the playoffs once in my 10 years of playing fantasy with you.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta pull the trigger. You know, trading's hard because you have to try to find something that's going to scratch either scratch both edges, you know, and then help both teams, or you have to try to sell high on someone and screw the other person over.
I had one good
which
trade.
I've done a few times, so
I've had one good trade, and it was in a keeper league with you where I traded, I even forget who I traded, but it was just like I don't know if it was Josh Colementer or just a starting pitcher along that vein that just had like a couple good weeks or solid seasons, and I traded him for Noah Syndergaard. And this was prime Noah Syndergaard that I got to keep for a little bit. So that was the one good trade I made. And I wasn't even offered that one. He offered me the trade. So
yeah,
I've been fleeced before. But regardless to say,
as we remember trades, yes.
the initial point is Pat Burrell. So Pat Burrell, just once again, solid corner outfielder, is going to hit you 25 to 30 bombs a year.
Must be on steroids.
Yeah, definitely. Especially in Citizens Bank Ballpark. Oh my god, you can't hit a thing, single thing out there. But yeah, just overall a very solid player. Zero-time All-Star. Just kind of shows you just how many solid players there are. Because we mentioned two very good corner outfielders for their time. Consistent 800, 850 OPS plus OPS seasons. And between them is combined one All-Star appearance.
Yeah. So I think his 2005 is funny. I'm going to look up the 2005 All-Star. And maybe his like first half was not good, but he finished seventh in MVP voting and did not make the All-Star team, which seems just funny to me.
Yeah. He also has a 14th place finish in 2002, a year that he hit 37 home runs, batted .282 with a .920 OPS. But, like, no All-Star appearances at all in Pat Burrell's career. Won a championship with the Giants in 2010. Phillies, they won in 2008, lost in 2009. They won a championship with the Phillies in 2008. So, a winning player. But yeah, I think that's my pick, Pat Burrell.
Yeah, I mean, that outfield for the 2005 All-Star Game played in Comerica Park was Bobby Abreu, Carlos Beltran, and Jim Edmonds.
I was going to say, I think that was the year that Bobby Abreu, I think he was like the year he like won the Home Run Derby or something like that. I don't know why I remember that, but.
Oof, Jason Bay.
Mets legend.
Yeah, Mets legend, for good or for worse. For better or for worse.
All right. I think that that does it. You want to get out of here with some parting thoughts?
I believe so. What do you got?
Oh, I was leading you up for some parting thoughts.
Well, my parting thoughts will be putting in the what the hell do you call them? Putting in our Twitter at the end. Putting in the promos, I guess. But follow us on Ball5Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And yeah, hopefully you enjoy and have fun. Always feel free to interact with either of us, or just interact with either that Twitter or Instagram there. So yeah.
I'm going to start to suggest that people listen to our podcast out of order. Like, I'm just going to tell people, when you listen, just start at the 50-minute mark and then cycle back after you've heard us plug our stuff. But yeah, DJ_Lopes9 on Twitter, Lopesy16 on Twitter, Ball5Pod, PODFI. I don't know why I did the spelling.
What?
I listen to POD.
Payable on death, baby.
We are the youth of the nation, baby. I think I was going to spell out five, but since pod was the last thing I said, I just spelt out pod. Whatever. We should end this. Have a good one. Enjoy. We hope you did.
Bye, everyone.